Good evening and welcome to City of Visions. I'm your host, Lauren Meltzer. Our topic for tonight is 35 years of getting to yes, San Francisco's community boards. We've all felt the stress that arises from a dispute with a neighbor, a conflict with a coworker, an argument with a landlord, or a long-standing disagreement with a family member. And some of us have experienced what can result when conflict goes unchecked, including costly lawsuits, property damage, and even violence. But for the past 35 years, one organization has been making a big difference in helping San Franciscans find quick, inexpensive, and lasting solutions to their conflicts. Community Boards, the longest-running public mediation service in the country, has trained over 16,000 volunteer mediators and assisted in the resolution of more than 46,000 disputes in the city alone, with a satisfaction rate of more than 85%. How does the mediation process work? Are some disputes simply impossible to mediate? Has our legal culture and our culture at large evolved to become more accepting of mediation? And how can you take advantage of Community Board's resources or even become a mediator yourself? Joining me to answer these questions and more are in studio Darlene Wida, Executive Director for Community Boards. She is also a faculty member of the City College of San Francisco, where she teaches courses in public health and conflict resolution in the workplace. Welcome, Darlene.
Thank you.
My second guest is Leora Kahn, Mediation Program Manager for Community Boards. Welcome, Leora.
Thanks.
And then we have Jay Fulberg, Professor Emeritus and former Dean of the University of San Francisco School of Law, and author of numerous texts on conflict resolution. He is now a mediator and arbitrator with JAMS, an international dispute resolution provider. Welcome, Jay.
Thank you, Lauren.
And later in the show, we'll hear from Tom Louise. He's Executive Director of Labor Relations and lead negotiator for the San Francisco Unified School District. Of course, we'll be taking calls from you. We'd like to hear from you, your thoughts, your opinions. Give us a call at 415-841-4134 or email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So let me start tonight with Darlene Wida. I'm hoping as executive director of Community Boards, you can let us know, what need did Community Boards seek to fill in San Francisco in 1976? I mean, were people having more disputes? Was it the activism? What was going on?
Great. That's a great way to start out. I think the folks that lived in San Francisco in the 70s know that it was a really exciting, mobilizing era in San Francisco and in the United States. There was a lot of radical movements at the time, and I think community-based mediation, the idea that conflicts could be resolved and alternative mechanisms outside of the courts, was an idea that really sprung out of these movements that were happening around at that time.
It was part of a national movement. It was power to the people, less dependence on government institutions, the positive development of community spirit. Mm-hmm. So it fit in very nicely with a lot of what was happening.
Was Community Board started by one person or multiple people?
The founder of Community Boards is Raymond Schoenholtz.
Okay.
And he is really the visionary that helped put into place what we see now as Community Boards, which is the oldest and longest running community-based mediation center in the country. And many, many organizations similar to Community Boards have now sprung in many cities throughout the United States.
So were people seeing it as a value of using the court? I mean, were the courts of equal value at that point? Or a different kind of value?
I think the fundamental tenet of Community mm-hmm. Boards, and one of the tenets that continues to drive our organization, is that community conflict can often be best resolved by the community itself. Mm. And that it's a civil responsibility of communities to help foster improvements within their own community, that when there's strife in a community, when there's violence in a community, when there are disputes, whether it be between two neighbors or between a landlord and a tenant or in an organization that resides in a community, that when there's conflict, that it has, it spreads out and has an effect throughout the neighborhood, and that communities themselves can help resolve that. And that's where the name community boards, although some people wonder what it means is that there's a board or a panel of volunteer mediators that are working within the community setting to help resolve the community conflict.
Excellent.
There was a lot going on in the courts at that time, too. The courts were getting overwhelmed. Civil rights litigation, civil rights laws were born and came into effect that gave people a lot more rights. And to enforce your rights, you had to go to court. So the courts were getting all kinds of new cases. People were becoming more aware that they had rights that pre-existed as well as the new ones. So the caseload in the courts really started going up. In addition, it was shortly after the Vietnam War. People were suspicious of government. They were suspicious of courts, particularly for personal matters. And the courts were also seeing a big increase in criminal cases, which have constitutional priority. And all of that meant that people's cases, what were considered by the legal community as the small cases, but very important and big to the individuals involved, were going to the back burner in the courts. And they were taking a lot more time to come in to hearing. And so justice was delayed. And as a consequence, community boards filled a need. So it was really part of a remedy to improve the situation of people with smaller claims.
Were you at the law school at the time?
I was at a law school, not in San Francisco. I was teaching up in Portland, Oregon.
Okay. And did you hear about community boards? I mean, did you hear kind of that there was this new organization that was taking...
Well, I heard it a lot from my law school, former law school classmate and good friend, Ray Schoenholz.
Okay.
And we were both involved in the development of mediation at that time, and I was involved as well with something akin to community boards in the Portland, Oregon area.
Okay. So what exactly, I like how we're kind of bouncing all over the place with my guests. Let me go back to you one more time, Darlene. What kind of disputes does community boards typically handle?
Super. And Leora as well can kind of bounce in too, because she runs the day-to-day operations of our mediation program.
Yes.
So community boards, for a nominal fee, about $15 or less, help San Francisco residents and nonprofit organizations and businesses find solutions, peaceful solutions to their conflicts. And we manage the everyday. Very typically, we manage the everyday sort of conflicts that happen between neighbors, roommates, between family members and homeowners. We see a lot of cases that are that include landlord and tenants, disputes between noise complaints, quality of life issues like vegetation or barking dog sort of cases, to business related cases too. So we see a range, a very, very, very large range, but typically, the cases for our neighborhood mediation program are the sort of disputes that people tend to have as their inevitable part of life of living in San Francisco.
Okay. And how does going to mediation differ from going to litigation? Maybe you want to jump in on this one, Leora?
Sure. So in a mediation, first of all, people come and they sit together at a table. And they're not represented by anyone. So they come into the room and they're with the mediators and everybody sits together at a round table. And the mediators are really helping them to talk about how this situation has affected them, how they're personally dealing with it, how it all got started. And they're really helping them to get the whole story out from start to finish and to find out what the underlying causes might be. So maybe they came in to discuss a fence, for example, or a noise issue, but maybe really, really the problem has been going on for a long time and it's something else. It's really, there's some underlying issue between them that started back 5-10 years ago, some other kind of neighbor issues. So the mediators are really, they really care about that. They really care about the relationship between these people, and really care about getting to the real root cause. And so there, it's really a discussion. And what differs is that the mediators help them to come up with their own solutions to their own problems. There isn't anyone, there's not an attorney representing them, and there isn't a judge or an arbitrator at the end who is making a judgment about how it should be resolved.
Now, that's really different than the way most, I guess, issues are resolved these days. You know, most people go to an authoritative figure to get a, like, who's right and who's wrong. So are people aware that they're going to get this kind, when they come to you, are they aware of the kind of feedback they're going to be getting, or are they sort of surprised?
Well, we try to be as clear and as educational as we can be from the very first time we pick up the phone. People may know what mediation's about, but there's also a good chance that they don't. They got our name somehow from the police. The police make a lot of referrals, or from someone, and they call us. And this is oftentimes a new concept for them. And people really want that day in court experience, because they feel very much that they're in the right.
Sure.
And so we educate them about what it is. They know fully when they come into the room what to expect. But still, I think it's not a model that anyone has typically experienced before. So, you know, oftentimes they are trying to prove to the mediators that they are the right, they're the right one. And the mediators really keep bringing it back to them, to the two people who are involved, because ultimately in mediation, that's what it's really about, is improving the communication between the two parties so that not only can they resolve this dispute, but in the future, they have the tools to resolve any future disputes.
So I know that probably there's a lot of confidentiality in the work you do, but can you give an example? I mean, even just not, you know, a real example, but, you know, if, you know, a neighbor that comes. Can you give some sort of example?
Yeah, I have a few that I can share with you. So one that I think that is, I think very, it's a good San Francisco example, is there was a yoga center, as we have many in San Francisco, and once a year they would have a big retreat. It was a teacher training, and people would come from all over the country to take part in this retreat and this training. And they would start at 5 in the morning, and there would be a big gong to start off the morning session, and there would be a lot of chanting. And that every time the new session would start, every hour, there'd be another gong, and this would go on throughout the day. And so there was a lot of complaints from the neighbors, very typical. In San Francisco, noise is a big issue because we have very big old houses with not a lot of soundproofing. And so you can often hear what's going on upstairs. So there was a few neighbors that were affected by this, and they complained. And so it did come to mediation. And so,
how did it get to mediation?
So the way cases typically come to mediation is that somebody gets a referral to us. So it may come from the police.
Like, would in this case, would they have called the police? I mean, that seems like the first point of contact.
Yeah.
And you're like, ugh.
They call the police. It happens all the time. People call the police on their neighbors for a party or some kind of noise. In this case, I'm not sure exactly how they got the referral, but let's just say it was the police, because that's pretty typical. So they called us, and the way our process works is we get in touch with the other party for them. They don't have to call them up and say, you know, I want to take you to mediation, nothing like that. So someone calls us, and we open the case. And we do all the legwork. So we get in touch with the other party, and we tell them about mediation, and we explain that we're a neutral third party, and we invite them to participate. And it's fully voluntary.
So why would the yoga studio be interested? I mean, they have nothing to gain. They just have something to lose, because now they're going to have to come up with a solution that they didn't even think there was a problem for. So what would be...
Well, people, especially businesses, well, and everyone really wants to have a good relationship with their neighbors. They don't want every time that they have some sort of training or some sort of retreat that the police are going to come or that someone is going to leave nasty notes on the door or talk poorly about them on Yelp, something like that. They could get poor reviews.
And they don't want to have the conflict escalate and have some case end up, you know, an attorney write a letter to them either. So they see mediation as a beneficial first step.
Okay, darling. Okay, so Leora, back to the process.
Back to the gong.
Yeah, back to the gong.
In this case, the yoga center agreed to start a little bit later. So not at 5, at 6:30. And also to refrain from using they were still going to do the chanting, but that the gong would not start until later in the morning. And the neighbors agreed to look into double-paned windows.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now you mentioned that, or we mentioned at the beginning, that there's an 85% satisfaction rate. Do you follow up surveys with people? Or?
We do. Yeah, we have an evaluation that they fill out right after. So the next day when we come in, we can see exactly, you know, whether they had an agreement or not, you know. But then starting about 2 months later, we want to see what the long-term effects are. So we call them and we have a list of questions that we ask them to see if they're upholding their agreements and if the other party is too.
And if they aren't, there's nothing really you can do, right? Because or can you?
Well, we can't enforce the agreement, but we can invite them back to have another session to revisit it.
Okay. And does that happen often?
It happens sometimes. Yeah. In general, people follow through with their agreements, because one thing that's particular about the kind of mediation that we do is that the mediators really are not making any suggestions or putting it in their words. Anything that's written down comes directly from the mouths of the parties involved. So people tend to uphold their agreements because it's really their own words.
Mm-hmm. And do you ever say no to someone that contacts you?
Occasionally, there are some cases that we feel like are not appropriate.
Okay, and Darlene, you're shaking, you're nodding. Can you add to that?
Sure. When there's someone involved in a domestic violence case, that's not really appropriate for community boards. If there's like an addiction or a drug use issue, that's very much informing what the dispute is related to. Oftentimes, that may not be best met in our context.
And why would that be, darling?
We want to be sure that when people are crafting an agreement, that it's something that they have the capacity to really stick with. And sometimes some people are not able to do that. So we want to make sure.
Could I also think that, you know, especially in like where there's some sort of abuse going on, there really probably is a right and wrong. Would that play into it at all, or does it really have to do with withholding their part of the agreement, Leora?
Well, occasionally some of our mediators are mandated reporters, and that's always in our training. That question always comes up. And a mandated reporter, there's certain professions where people are required if they know about abuse in any circumstance, are required to report it. So that might come up, but I think more than anything is that we don't want to send people back into a situation that's harmful to them. Mm-hmm. And so, in a domestic violence situation, for example, someone might agree to something and go back to the living situation, and then potentially it could even escalate and be worse, or
Okay. If you're just tuning in, this is City Visions, and tonight we're discussing mediation in San Francisco. Joining me are Darlene Wyda, Executive Director of the Community Boards, Leora Kahn, Mediation Program Manager for Community Boards, Jay Fulberg, Professor Emeritus and former Dean of the University of San Francisco School of Law and author of numerous texts on conflict resolution, and also now a mediator and arbitrator with JAMS, And coming soon will be Tom Ruiz, the Executive Director of Labor Relations and lead negotiator for the San Francisco Unified School District. If you'd like to join us, here's the number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or join us by emailing us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Would you ever consider mediation, or have you, you know, had any unresolved conflicts that you think could benefit from mediation? We'd love to hear from you. Again, the number is 415-841-4134, or email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Jay, I want to go back to you and talk a little bit about the idea of using mediation as a, you know, as opposed to in a legal culture. Because did it sort of evolve from a legal culture, or did it evolve from something else?
Mediation began early on outside the legal culture. It was used regularly in labor management disputes, and there are many mediation boards in some part of the countries that are totally unlike community boards. It's a labor board to resolve industrial disputes. And so we learned a lot from that, and it evolved from that. And then it started being used a lot in domestic relations cases, not domestic violence, but just disputes within families. It lends itself so well to that, as you described it, sitting around a table trying to figure out an answer to a common problem that arises from a relationship. So we really took it from there and applied it to more of the types of cases that come into court.
And have the public, do you feel the public is accepting of mediation, or there's still resistance?
The legal community has accepted mediation, at least in California. There has been a change in the legal culture to embrace mediation, where it used to be resistant because it was something new and different that lawyers weren't very comfortable with. I think the public has been slower to accept it because it hasn't been popularized. I mean, we still have shows on TV that show the courtroom and a judge sitting up there and someone being right and someone being wrong and the case being decided by eloquent advocacy. And there was last year, I think for the first time, a mediation show, hardly legal.
It was fairly legal, I think.
Yes, and I don't know what's happened to that, but it was kind of neat because at least it showed something about mediation. It was popularized and it was only half true, but at least it showed the basic notion of having a third party help you negotiate a dispute.
Was there enough drama in it?
Well, they added drama, and that's what made it unreal, because watching a mediation is often like watching bark grow on a tree or watching someone's dirty wash in the dryer. It's colorful for a moment, but it's not very interesting to most people.
So why would there be a show on mediation, do you think? What was it about? Is it that it was kind of like, what do you think would make the networks interested in?
Whether it succeeded, I'm not sure, but I think the effort, which was very good, was to say, hey, we all have conflict, and how do we get conflict resolved? So they showed situations of conflict and an alternative way of resolving it with a very glamorous young woman mediator. And she added drama, she added comedy. But I think they were trying to say, this is something that impacts all of us, and maybe there's a different way to go about it.
Do you think that people have become, even though you mentioned that they're slow to accept, the public is slow to accept mediation, do you think that the television shows that have kind of brought people's issues into the public, whether it's Dr. Phil or Judge Judy, do you think that sort of made it more acceptable for people to step into a mediation situation and not feel threatened that a third party is going to get involved?
No, I think it may have even had the opposite result. I mean, I wouldn't want to be on some of those shows bringing my conflict to Judge Judy, because Judge Judy is hamming it up and she's the chief fish in the room. And it's not very appealing, other than that you get your case resolved. If we could only show mediation for what it is, which is here's the best way to resolve your dispute, because there'll be a neutral third party with no stake in the outcome who's not going to decide the outcome, but is skilled, mm-hmm. as they are at community boards, and helping the conflicted parties weigh all the options to become problem solvers rather than battlers, and to start thinking a little bit out of the I win, you lose box. And that's what they do at community boards and in any other good mediation setting.
I see you nodding again, Darlene.
Well, one of the things I wanted to add is that, you know, when you start talking to people about what do they feel when they feel like they're in conflict, most people want to avoid it. Most people want to suffer and run away from it and not really discuss it head on. Most people's experiences with conflict have been, you know, negative. And there are a lot of folks who... It takes a lot of effort. They come to community boards a little late in the process, although they get tremendous help. We would love, part of the bigger vision, I think, of community-based mediation centers is to really change some of the culture that we have around conflict, to help people understand that dealing with a conflict doesn't have to be, you know, frightening, scary, and result in some negative outcome. It's just the opposite, that by dealing with conflict, people can experience tremendous benefit and new opportunity and something very, very positive. And we get to see it. Lior and I get to see it every single day. And we would love for people to know that as scary as it is to give a call to an organization like Community Boards to say, I have a conflict and I need help, most people, when they do it, they feel tremendous relief.
Now, in schools, they're teaching a lot of conflict resolution skills. Are you seeing that bubble up at all in terms of the people that you're seeing kind of know the language or know the drill?
I think it's a core capacity that we need a lot more of in schools and public schools and private schools. It needs to start at a young age. People are very influenced by their parents as role models. And in large cities, most people have not had a positive experience at home with conflict. So there has been a wonderful trend. Community Boards has trained about 3,000 schools throughout the country in developing peer mediation programs. And we think that there's more to be done. We'd love to be a part of that.
And Leora, there's clearly economic benefits too. It's $15, is that right?
$15 to open a case. For most of our cases. We do have some cases that we call our specialized cases that we do charge a bit for, just for the mediations themselves. But the majority of our cases, really like 90%, it's just the $15 case opening fee. And then if people want to make a donation at the end, then that's great. But it's beyond the $15, it's free of charge.
And how does that compare to if you went to the courts?
Well, it's hundreds of dollars to file in court. And, of course, that's just the beginning. There's all kinds of added fees. There's a cost of discovery to find the evidence on the other side. Most cases in court, you're best off with an attorney, and then the fees really start escalating. So $15 or $50 is just such a nominal amount compared to all the alternatives, at least going through the courts.
Lior, do you find that there's a certain economic class that ends up seeing you, or do you get all across the map?
Actually, it's all across the map. It's every neighborhood. It's every kind of person, the whole demographic spectrum.
Interesting. Well, this is City Visions on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Lauren Meltzer. If you're just tuning in, tonight we're discussing mediation in San Francisco and the 35th anniversary of the organization Community Boards. My guests are Darlene Wyda, Executive Director for Community Boards, and she is also a faculty member of the City College of San Francisco, where she teaches public health courses and conflict resolution in the workplace. Leora Kahn, Mediation Program Manager for Community Boards. Jay Fulberg, Professor Emeritus and former Dean of the University of San Francisco School of Law, and author of numerous texts on conflict resolution, and now a mediator and arbitrator with JAMS, an international dispute resolution provider. And in a little bit, we'll be bringing in Tom Reese, Executive Director of Labor Relations and Lead Negotiator for the San Francisco Unified School District. You can join us by calling 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134.
4134 or emailing us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. We would be very interested in hearing from people who maybe have an opinion on this whole idea of using mediation versus having a kind of right or wrong, or if you have something that you'd like to explore with the mediators here, we'd love to hear from you. Again, the phone number is 415-841-4134 or emailing us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So you have had lots of different kinds of cases, and my understanding is that that Tom Ariz is one of them. Tom, welcome to City Visions. Why don't you join our conversation at this point?
All right. Thank you, and thank you for having us on the program tonight.
Now, you have taken advantage of community boards for the San Francisco schools. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what how you've used them, and, you know, I don't know, again, how much is confidential, but maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, why you decided to call them, and would you have gone to court?
Yeah, as one of your guests has stated, mediation is common in labor relations, labor management contracts. And we actually have a kind of formal mediation process already in our collective bargaining agreement. That's a step before we go to the process called arbitration, which I won't waste a lot of time going through all our grievance and arbitration steps. But what the union, and I want to give a big kudo to the United Educators of San Francisco, because they actually brought up the idea as we were dealing with issues and said, why don't we give community boards a try on some of these issues that neither one of us want to go through the process of going to arbitration and all the time and expense and energy. And I believe it's Leora who said it, or maybe it was Darlene who said, as in many disputes, they're best solved locally. And that's a fundamental tenet of labor management relations. If you can solve it at the local level, that's usually the best. And what we try to do is to the union and the district, by mutual agreement, we both have to agree to take a situation to say, why don't we give community boards a try? And either the union representative or myself will call Leora, and that kind of, you know, kickstarts the process. And a couple quick examples we've used is one is between intrapersonal relationships between the staff, where it's really not a labor management contract issue. It's personality conflicts. It's people unable to get along. It's where we need sometimes that just independent third party to sit down and say, you know, what are the issues that are driving this? Is it history? Is it the current way of the working relationships being dealt with at one of our school sites? And community boards have been very helpful in that situation. Other situations sometimes can be larger. We generally do not engage in discipline-related situations because those are governed by our collective bargaining agreement. But a lot of it, a lot of times it relates to communication, and it's really helpful to have a third party come in and help focus the parties on their respective interests and try to work towards a common solution.
And when there's so much history involved, I mean, is it really that, I mean, can community boards, have you seen in the case of the school district where the community board help?
I think they can, you know, both parties, again, when the district and the union are going out to a school site or a child development center and saying, look, you know, both of us think it may be worthwhile for you to give this mediator a try and see if the mediator, you know, it's neither the union nor the district, because I think, you know, we always, either they're right or we're right, depending on the
sure.
point of view. And we can both say, look, we're not saying who's right, and a lot of times it's a matter of gray, and a mediator can help kind of unveil the issues and really help the parties come to the different kinds of options that hopefully they can, from them, select one that works for all parties.
Okay. And did you, I mean, have you ever had a situation where it had to go to court after?
Well, we have a process called arbitration, which is similar to a judicial proceeding where, you know, if we have a dispute about what the contract, what our labor agreement means, that can end up before an arbitrator who actually serves in a judicial, quasi-judicial, like setting and makes a finding. So, yeah, we do a few of those. Not every case is suitable for community boards, but on the cases that we both agree to, it's been very helpful. And in fact, we have been using proceeds from Proposition A, which was passed by the voters, to help support this effort. Both the union and the district are contributing shares to make the community board's assistance possible.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And, you know, I want to have a, we have a caller, our first caller for the evening, who I guess also had an experience. Corey, welcome to City Visions.
Very much. I appreciate your program.
Great. And did you, you're from San Francisco. You attended a hearing?
I was actually brought to a community board by a disgruntled neighbor, and it was over something that was seemingly trivial. The height of a hedge in front of our house. And during the hearing, I was very frustrated because I felt like really he wasn't being very truthful about his circumstance. And yet the mediators kept us going and kind of told me to kind of put that in the background and just work on this one issue. And then we made a few other agreements, not all of which have been actually carried out since 2 years ago when we went to the hearing. But on the other hand, I will say this, our relationship is much better. That I think just by going there and having a public forum, he kind of got what he wanted out of it. But that in the continuing kind of distress that we've had a bit with each other, I think we're both each more responsive to each other, even though it's still not, I would say, a good relationship. It's one that was helped by this process. And it seemed so flawed to me at the time that I wasn't very hopeful that anything positive would come out of it. And like I said, those numbered agreements that we made were not actually carried out fully, but somehow it changed things.
So in your situation, you got the call, and it wasn't like anyone was going to Yelp about you, and you weren't going to lose business. What was your incentive for going?
I just wanted to, I was interested in this process. I was happy to actually have a forum in which to speak publicly in this kind of private public setting with others observing. To my neighbor, who had been very hard to talk to, and we've had some kind of really difficult moments in our long relationship. We both lived here a long time. So I thought that just to have an outside mediator couldn't hurt, even though kind of he was coming as the injured party. And so I thought, okay, well, let's just try it and see what happens.
Okay, and... Jay, does this sound familiar, like a familiar situation? Thank you very much, Corey.
It's great to hear it from Corey, who was involved, and it comes back to a comment Darlene made, that conflict is unpleasant, if not downright painful for most people. Most people prefer harmony and to get along with their neighbors and rather not be in conflict. So I think Corey is not atypical of saying, hey, this might help, what's to lose? And in fact, talking and just as much listening almost always helps.
That's the relationship. Yes, Leora, do you have something that you would want to add?
I think just the word that Corey said a few times, and I think is so key to the work that we do, is relationship. You know, that's really, really the work. Yes, people need to resolve these bones of contention, but the deeper work that we're doing is really trying to improve how people relate to each other in the long term, and to really improve relationships You know, it sounds like in his case that he has been neighbors with this other person for many years, you know, and people have deep relationships with the people that they work with, that they're with the people they live next door to, with the people that they're involved with in all areas of their life. And that's when you can improve people's relationship skills, that's where the real growth is and the real improvement.
Well, what do you do as a mediator if you perceive a party's not being truthful?
So the mediators are very, very skilled in asking really, really good questions. And so the mediation is really only as strong as the people's willingness to be there and their willingness to be real with each other. So when the mediators get maybe a gut feeling or a perception that that's what's happening, they will possibly change the kinds of questions that they're asking, really trying to get to what the feelings might be underlying there. Because there's no benefit to somebody lying, to somebody being untruthful, because nobody is making, as we've said a few times, that nobody is making a judgment. So there really is no benefit for a person to be untruthful. So the mediators just try to help them to get to what is real for them.
Do you ever sit in that room and think, you know, like I really feel for this guy over here
all the
really
time.
Kind of
as much as mediators work on their objectives, their skills to be objective, we're human beings. And so actually that's why we have our mediators working in there's several reasons why we have our mediators working in panels. But one of them is so that when a mediator is being triggered, because inevitably that is going to happen, someone else can take the back seat, and then someone else can really step in with the questions.
Oh, interesting. If you're just tuning in, this is City Visions. Tonight we're discussing mediation in San Francisco. Joining me are Darlene Wida, Executive Director for Community Boards. She is also a faculty member of the City College of San Francisco, where she teaches public health courses and conflict resolution in the workplace. Leora Kahn, Mediation Program Manager for Community Boards. Jay Fulberg, Professor Emeritus and former Dean of the University of San Francisco School of Law and author of numerous texts on conflict resolution, and now a mediator and arbitrator with JAMS, an international dispute resolution provider.
Darlene, you asked about truth. The more I mediate it, and I'd be interested in hearing my colleagues' views on this, the more I've come to realize that truth, like beauty, is all in the mind of the beholder. What we deal with are different perceptions. Mm-hmm. Sure, sometimes people flat out lie, but far more often they present what they believe to be true as they perceive it. And the perception can be so different on the other side of the table, it sounds like a lie. Mm-hmm. But the process of really listening and trying to understand where that person's coming from and why to them what they've given is what happened in their mind or how they felt about it, which belies truth, it's so much a matter of perception that
That's right.
most conflicts arise from.
Right. Most people,
Darlene.
I would like to add that, you know, what is a conflict? A conflict is when, you know, two or more people perceive, just like Jay is saying, a threat to their own particular interest or to their value system or to a need that they have. And oftentimes we walk around not knowing that other people have felt a threat to something very core to themselves. It's core to their own experience. And so this is the place, coming to Community Boards. We really, really, really want to invite all San Francisco residents to know that Community Boards is available to help you resolve these sort of disputes. And it's true, you get to the table and you think your position is the only position, and then you start listening. And now you realize that there's someone else who has a very different take on an experience. And it's through these very talented, highly trained volunteer mediators where people really get a chance to really see the range of the experiences. And I want to just say that a lot of people in San Francisco call Community Boards, and now you can go online to open a case at our new website, communityboards.org and do an online case opening, which is really, really exciting. But a lot of people call because they want to be the mediator. They're very, very interested. And I just want to say a word about that, if I may.
Sure.
Which is that you don't need to be a lawyer to be a mediator at Community Boards. You don't need to be a therapist. We have a lot of social workers and lawyers who are interested in being mediators, and we welcome you to be a part of our community of mediators. But many folks who are just, you know, all over the range of professions, backgrounds, ages, ethnicities, sexual orientations are really invited. Language diversity, we're really looking for folks with Mandarin and Cantonese language skills, Spanish skills, to be a part of our community. And we offer the one of the very best mediation trainings in the United States. It's really well known throughout the country as being really the gold standard for training folks to be mediators.
Can someone really learn to be a mediator? It seems like you'd have to have a certain skill set that not everyone would have. And it's almost an intuition to know, like, when to jump in, when, you know, the kinds of questions you're going to ask, like, kind of like what you were talking about, Jay, in terms of, you know, kind of the belief that people really believe what they're saying. So is it something that you really can teach people, or just to some people not really meant for mediation?
We feel that the people who kind of sort themselves out, who contact us, have already kind of like jumped through a hoop, a self-selected hoop of folks. But we do find that you can teach youth conflict resolution skills, and we're in schools across the country. And even children, very young children, can learn the basic tenets of conflict and communication management skills. But it's very, very affordable. I think one of the things that we do operate on a shoestring, and we're not a fancy, we're a very casual organization, and we do provide for a very affordable rate a mediation training. And so that's something else that we would love for people to know about Community Boards.
I have some emails here, but before I go to them, I just want to, if listeners, if you'd like to be part of this conversation, the number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Let me first go to Michael and Tiburon. He sent an email about mediation, and he wonders, does mediation save court costs? Jay?
It both saves court costs for the individuals, and it saves costs for the courts. Mm-hmm. Yes, very definitely, and that's part of the big motivation people have in looking for alternatives like community boards. It's more accessible. It's just less expensive.
And we also have a couple of questions from Kevin in Foster City. He wants to know what the common problems getting both sides to agree to meet. What are the common problems getting both sides to agree to mediation, Leora?
Well, I think that this relates to what Jay was saying about when people have their perspective, that they feel that they're right. They feel that the way that they experience it is true. And so what I hear a lot from people is, oh, I think that this is fantastic. I really support this. I believe in this, but my case is different. And that if you knew this other person, you would know that they would never be willing to come to the table. And, you know, I think that when people are involved in a conflict, it's so stressful, you know, and it keeps them up at night. And they have such strong feelings towards the other person that they really believe that. But what I encourage them is just to give it a try. You have nothing to lose. And sure enough, a lot of the time, the other person is very willing to meet. So I think that's a common block for people. They just think that it's great, but it's not going to work for them. And I just encourage people to give it a try.
And what you stated about the other side always saying, it won't work because my opponent is unreasonable and would never come to the table. And it's so common that you hear that coming from both sides.
Yes.
I'm a reasonable person. I'd go for it in a moment.
Yeah.
But not the other side. And if you can only talk to both, you'd find out they reflect the same view of one another, and they want to be seen as reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And most people, when you contact them, are much more open to coming to mediation than you might think. It's been interesting when you asked earlier about how did he get started in the courts and how come it's been accepted more by attorneys. It was a tough road, and a lot of judges around the country started mandating mediation. And a lot of legislators, including those in California, mandated mediation of certain types of cases, everything from parenting disputes to trailer park disputes. You had to go to mediation before you can go to court. And even in those mandated cases, where in effect people came kicking and screaming, the satisfaction rate is very similar to what Leora mentioned. It's close to 85% even in mandated cases that when they're done, they say, you know, this was helpful. You can't just accept these blocks.
Well, let me, Kevin had another question, which I think is interesting. He says, we've seen mediation not work with big problems, for example, Israel-Palestinian conflict. With resolving conflicts in a large magnitude, are they just not going to work?
Well, we've seen examples where mediation has worked in large situations. Every situation is a large situation for those involved. But it's much easier to resolve a dispute, as Tom said, on the local level. Get down to the local level. And indeed, what's most promising, for instance, between Israel and the Palestinian territories, there are some of the programs that are built up around the border, helping people who live almost as neighbors resolve their individual cases and learn through that the enemy on the other side isn't just all bad, and that maybe we can talk to one another. Not easy agreements will be reached, but we can talk to one another. And small business people on both sides of the Palestinian-Israeli border have started working out because they have to do commerce. There's an amazing amount of commerce going on across the border where people can't always pass, but they somehow send their goods, and then what do they do when there's a dispute? So there are these smaller scale resolutions going on between the people at war, and you only hope, just like with programs with youth and children, mm-hmm. that you build from the local bottom up mm-hmm. until you can change the mindset on some of these larger conflicts.
Excellent. Are there any disadvantages to mediation, Jay?
Sure there are. There are some cases, as was pointed out, where Darlene said you can't mediate everything. Mediation is a form of negotiation between people, and you have the third party helping to facilitate that negotiation. But if the bargaining power, for instance, in a domestic violence or domestic abuse situation, mm-hmm. is so great, you can't mediate because you can't compromise domestic violence. Mm-hmm. You can't compromise certain civil rights. You can't say, okay, sorry, people of this color, you don't have to sit in the back of the bus. You can sit in the middle of the bus. That just won't do. You have to get to the core of the difference and have it resolved maybe by an authority figure. But those cases are relatively rare. Everyone wants to notch their case up to a matter of principle. But most disputes are matters of hedges, where there's privacy versus views, where there's small businesses, who's going to pay what to whom. These aren't great matters of principle. There's matters of getting it resolved and getting on with it. So getting it down, as Tom said, to the local level, which is just what community boards do, is the way to make it work. And there are some cases that just because of the nature of the importance of the matter or the unequal bargaining power or the underlying values like civil rights can't be mediated.
And we have another caller. I think this is the last one of the night, so we're getting toward the top of the hour. But let's go to, we have Constance from Berkeley. Good evening, Constance.
Hi. Hello.
Hi. Welcome to City Visions.
Thank you.
So you had an experience, sounds like a bad experience, with a mediation.
I had a very bad experience. And in fact, I'm in a situation right now which, you know, I've thought maybe mediation would be helpful, but I had such a bad experience before that I've been afraid to try that.
Can you tell us really briefly, and unfortunately we have not that much time, but can you tell us kind of briefly what happened?
Yes. Well, I didn't go through with it. I didn't participate in the mediation experience because I had such a bad experience just calling and asking for information. And my situation was, difficult and complicated. And at the time, I was extremely ill. I'd been injured, and I sustained brain damage. And anytime you have, I was basically permanently disabled as a result of it. And that causes all kinds of problems. So it caused a lot of stress with my roommates. And I asked if it would be possible to, in a mediation process, to have an advocate to speak for me because, with brain damage, you just can't do that. And plus, there were five other people. And the woman responded that, she basically said that it didn't sound like I had brain damage. Sounded fine to me, to her. And it was so horrified by that. I definitely got the message that I wouldn't be safe in the mediation process, that there wouldn't be anyone to protect me and my rights.
That's a really, I think that's a really interesting point. And let me actually, ask Leora about this. Thank you so much for sharing that, Constance. And I'm sorry about your experience. Leora, feeling safe in an environment must be a very, very important part of, people's willingness. So how we're coming to the top of the hour, but can you quickly kind of tell about how community boards and mediators can assure that when they're trying to stay neutral?
Well, making and creating a safe environment from the get-go. And also, I just want to echo to Constance that I'm sorry that you had a situation like that come up. That creating a safe environment for us is the most important thing, because we know that, as Darlene was saying before, that conflict for all of us is so uncomfortable. And it's so much easier for us just to bury our heads in the sand. I mean, it's really takes a lot of courage to come to the table. And we know that. And we know in order for it to work that people have to feel safe. And so we have some guidelines that the mediators follow to ensure that people are respected and that people are heard. And that people also that there's that the language that's used, that people are using respectful language, and that also so important that people really listen to each other and aren't interrupting each other, for example. So those are just a few of the there's so many ways that the mediators create a safe space in the mediation room. But those are just the most basic guidelines that they use. Typically, when one calls a mediation center, and there are several in the Bay Area, so in community boards, we take cases just from San Francisco. We start using these skills, these active listening skills, from the very first time we pick up the phone. So we're creating that safe space from the moment we pick up the phone.
Well, I would love to keep talking with everyone, but we are out of time. So that's City Visions for this evening. Thank you so much to my guests, Darlene Wida, Executive Director, Community Boards, Leora Kahn, Mediation Program Manager, and Jay Fulberg, Professor Emeritus and former Dean of the University of San Francisco School of Law and author of numerous texts on conflict resolution and also mediator and arbitrator with JAMS. And a special thanks to Tom Ruiz, who joined us for a minute, who's the Executive Director of Labor Relations and Lead Negotiator for the San Francisco Unified School District. For a link to this and other City Vision shows, and to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, check out our website at cityvisionsradio.com. Our engineer this evening was Kevin Vance. Thank you very much, Kevin. Tonight's show was produced by Susie Britton. Thank you so much, Susie. Great job. City Vision's founder is Rose Levinson. Judith Sanson is our senior producer. And our other contributing producers are Lisa Denemark and Yumi Wilson. Join City Visions next week, where my host will co-host Joseph Pache will explore transmasculine arts and expression in the Bay Area. This is Lauren Meltzer. Thank you for listening. Good night and have a great week.